Iris once told me that the question of identity had always puzzled her. She thought she herself hardly possessed such a thing, whatever it was. I said that she must know what it was like to be oneself, even to revel in the consciousness of oneself, as a secret and separate person, a person unknown to any other. She smiled, was amused, looked uncomprehending. It was not something she bothered about. Conceivably, it is the persons who hug their identity most closely to themselves for whom the condition of Alzheimer's is most dreadful. Iris's own lack of a sense of identity seemed to float her more gently into its world of preoccupied emptiness. Placidly, every night, she insists on laying out quantities of her clothing on my side of the bed, and when I quietly remove them, back they come again. She wants to look after me? Is that it? It may be a simpler sort of confusion, for when we go to bed, she often asks me which side she should be on. Or is it something deeper and fuller, less conscious and less caring than that far too self-conscious adjective suggests? She has never wanted to look after me in the past, thank goodness. Indeed, one of the pleasures of living with Iris was her serenely benevolent unawareness of one's daily welfare. So restful. Having a busy personality, I made a great thing to myself about looking after her. She never needed to tell herself to look after me. But when I broke my leg once in the snow at Christmas and had to lie up for a few days in Banbury Hospital, a dozen miles off, she came and stayed in a bed and breakfast hotel outside the hospital gate. I besought her to remain at home and work instead of wasting her time. There was nothing she could do. But no, she stayed there until I was fit enough to come home with her. Now, nearly 50 years later, we remain for ourselves the same couple. Looking back, I separate us with difficulty. We seem always to have been together. But memory draws a sharp divide, nonetheless. The person I was at that age now seems odd to myself. Could I have really been in love? Could I have felt, at least some of the time, all that jealousy, ecstasy, misery, longing, unhopefulness, mingled with a fever of possibility and joy? I can hardly believe it. But where Iris is concerned, my own memory, like a snug-fitting garment, seems to have zipped itself up to the present second. As I work in bed early in the morning, typing on my old portable with Iris quietly asleep beside me, her presence, as she now is, seems as it always was, and as it always should be. I know she must once have been different, but I have no true memory of a different person. Waking up for a peaceful second or two, she looks vaguely at the Olivetti lying on my knees, cushioned by one of her jerseys. Not long ago, when I asked if it disturbed her, she said she liked to hear that funny noise in the morning. She must be used to it, although a couple of years ago she would have been getting up herself at this time, 7 o'clock, and preparing to start her own day. Nowadays, she lies quietly asleep, sometimes giving a little grunt or murmur, often sleeping well past 9 when I rouse and dress her. This ability to sleep like a cat at all hours of the day and night must be one of the great blessings that sometimes goes with Alzheimer's, converse of the anxiety state that comes on in wakefulness and finds worried words like, "When are we leaving?" It is wonderfully peaceful to sit in bed with Iris reassuringly asleep and gently snoring. Half asleep again myself, I have a feeling of floating down the river and watching all the rubbish from the house and from our lives, the good as well as the bad, sinking slowly down through the dark water until it is lost in the depths. Iris is floating or swimming quietly beside me. Weeds and larger leaves sway and stretch themselves beneath the surface. Blue dragonflies dart and hover to and fro by the river bank, and suddenly a kingfisher flashes past. Rivers featured on our honeymoon. We were married nearly 3 years after we first met. I once worked out the number of days that had gone by since the morning I'd seen Iris bicycling slowly past the window, but I have forgotten the number now, and it would take me too long to work it out again. We were married at the registrar's office in St. Giles. After the operation, one could hardly call it a ceremony, which lasted about 3 minutes, the wife of my senior colleague, they were a very nice couple, said in her rather fussy way, "I must go and look after Mrs. Bailey." She meant my mother, but her husband said to her, with what Iris later described as a grim laugh, "Every woman here is called Mrs. Bailey, except you." It was true. My mother and sister-in-law, also a Mrs. Bailey, were present, no other ladies. Iris said that this was the ghastliest moment of what was for her an extremely gruesome occasion. She was now lumped among a lot of Mrs. Baileys. Her own mother, incidentally, had managed to miss the train from Paddington to Oxford. After the business was over, we went down to the station to meet the next train, found her, and cheered up a good deal over a drink at a nearby pub. This was not a very good start. But it was not exactly a start in any case. It seemed more of an anticlimax. The world we knew ending not with a bang but a whimper. At the same time, this feeling of détente was very welcome. All tensions, queries, uncertainties, all the things that for months and years seemed to have made up the drama of living, were now over. That was a real source of satisfaction to both of us. At least, I knew it was for me. And when Iris squeezed my hand at the station and said how nice and settled and yet unfamiliar it felt now to be together, it reassured me that all was well. So married life began, and the joys of solitude. No contradiction was involved. The one went perfectly with the other. To feel oneself held and cherished and accompanied, and yet to be alone. To be closely and physically entwined, and yet feel solitude's friendly presence, as warm and undesolating as contiguity itself. I never missed Iris, and I don't think in that sense she ever missed me. Apartness, when it happened, was itself a kind of closeness. In those early days, when televisions were all black and white, and we never possessed or wanted one, there was an advertisement we saw on the flickering screen sometimes when we visited her mother. It showed a young man on a genteel urban street corner with an English drizzle gently falling. He is turning up his hat brim against the rain and lighting a cigarette. Along the road, some young people have emerged laughing from a lighted house and are getting into a car. Our young man surveys them with a self-satisfied and slightly pitying amusement and puffs on his cigarette. The caption was, "You're never alone with a strand." We had often seen the strand advertisement together on her mother's TV and laughed over it, and so TV advertisements, as well as great pictures, entered the emerging world of her novels. More important for me, the advertisement symbolized the satisfactions of our own kind of solitude in closeness. The Strand was one of the most unsuccessful brands of cigarette ever marketed. I remember later hearing from a young man, an ex-pupil who worked in advertising, that in those circles it was mentioned in the same breath as Craven A. Craven A, although it continued to be a popular smoke, once nearly ruined itself with the advertisement, "Craven A does not affect your throat." Smokers had at once put their hands to their throats and thought, "God, I'd better cut them out." The young man in the Strand advertisement had the same effect on the smoking public. He was so clearly going to be alone for a long, long time. But I took the same satisfaction in the advertisement that I did in our new way of life. It was very different from the life we live today. It was like being alone, and yet we were not alone. I never travelled in the spirit after Iris, when she was away for a brief period, in London or teaching, or once when she had a half-semester's fellowship at Yale. We were separate, but never separated. I never looked at a photograph of her either. It seemed to have no connection with her as she was. Now we are together for the first time. We have actually become, as is often said of a happily married couple, inseparable. In a way like Ovid's Baucis and Philemon, to whom the gods gave the gift of growing old together like entwined trees. It is a way of life that is unfamiliar. The closeness of apartness has necessarily become the closeness of closeness, and we know nothing of it. We have never had any practice. Not that we ever practiced the opposite, the way of life, not uncommon in academe, to define which a philosophical friend of Iris's coined the word telegamy. Telegamy, marriage at a distance, works well for some people who prefer to remain an independent part of an item. It may sharpen their satisfaction in time spent together, as well as being of practical convenience if careers are to be pursued in places far apart. But it is not, as noted by Anthony Powell, the same thing as being married. Apartness in marriage is a state of love, and not a function of distance or preference or practicality. A goose which cannot find other geese will attach itself to some object, another animal, even a stone or a post, and never lose sight of it. This terror of being alone, of being cut off for even a few seconds from the familiar object, is a feature of Alzheimer's. If Iris could climb inside my skin now, or enter me as if I had a pouch like a kangaroo, she would do so. She has no awareness of what I am doing, only an awareness of what I am. The words and gestures of love still come naturally, but they cannot be accompanied by that wordless communication, which depends on the ability to use words. In any case, she has forgotten public language, although not our private one, which cannot now get us very far. I sit at the kitchen table and make desperate efforts to keep it as my own preserve, as it has always been. Iris seems to understand this, and when prompted goes obediently into the sitting room where the TV is switched on. In less than a minute, she is back again.